On this week's Big Tech Show, how will the latest developments in artificial intelligence affect your life? Will you get new powerful personal assistants? Are you in danger of something terrible happening? We explain what's going on.
Just a couple of weeks ago, Anthropic, which is OpenAI competitor, their startup lab, actually founded by former OpenAI employees, they actually eclipsed GPT-4 only just a couple of weeks ago with their latest model, and the internet went crazy. This is just better than GPT-4 at everything. So OpenAI had to respond to that.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
Seachtain, an Indo-Ascaliger.
Time I mon iarracht I aon of chacht ar a chorp, agus súlagam a machan seo, gur féidir é a chur in uig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltí, fís, tuirmí.
Tá sé dochreitse nach bhéadach ara I gúrna meán an cheistin a eicol.
Bhí an tálam a gináam gribh orachar an reachtam, Iadach sé tarin gribhan orachar san I lis dúhal agus gimine fnacht gór a clig sár ducha sin eachar. Now ni vin aon dar darach sin, vin marav.
Seachtain, find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
Today's episode of the Indo Daily contains language some listeners may find offensive.
If I felt for one second, I was a little bit out of order, I'd apologise and I'd go back. But I'm 100% right. I know I am.
In 2002, for the third time in 12 years, Ireland had qualified for the World Cup in Japan after a playoff with Iran.
Duff in close attendance, Keane is fouled. Duff helping it on towards Finnan. Finnan facing Cuckoo. And a little cross in there, and it's come through here. McAteer!
World Cup fever gripped the nation. Roy Keane was considered one of the greatest footballers of his generation. He was captain of Ireland and Manchester United.
This is Keane. Trying to find some room, and he has!
Here came the good times, or so we thought. But the on-pitch action would forever be overshadowed by the off-pitch drama in Saipan.
Captain Roy Keane was threatening to abandon the side at the very moment he was needed most.
It's been a troublesome 24 hours in paradise for Roy Keane.
Some personal problems, which are personal to him, and he has to go home.
And I went for my meal at 6:30 on the Thursday, and I was told there was a meeting at 7:30. And I knew what it was all about. I knew.
My thought when it was going off, they are absolutely going to come to blows here.
The biggest story in Irish sporting history had erupted on a faraway Pacific island. A story that divided the nation.
Screaming matches among journalists, because it was a civil war. You were either on Mick's side, his side, or Roy's side.
As a Man United supporter, the amount of stupid arguments I got into over your far against Roy.
I tell people the truth, and they think it's hell.
What about all the little kids in Ireland who have you as a role model, love you, and who are absolutely appalled that this row has taken place?
It's not the Republic of Mick McCarthy.
No.
It's not the Republic of Roy Keane either.
I wouldn't have any regrets. I've never lost a wink of sleep.
Everything came to a head that week in Saipan, but tensions had been building for years between Keane and manager Mick McCarthy. Kevin Kilbane won over 100 caps for Ireland and was a key member of the squad in 2002.
Everybody knew there was history. It was even prior to me being in the squad, and it was something that was spoken about that Mick and Roy don't get on. Honestly, I never saw it bubbling over. They'd obviously had words in the past with each other privately and things like this, but it never came to become a problem for anybody within the squad, because we never really bothered about the things that had gone on in the past. And you know, we'd all been around enough dressing rooms in the past and we'd seen enough arguments in the past to think, look, they don't get on with each other, and that's pretty much it. You're getting on, you're just here to play a game or to do the business, and that's it. You just get back.
Vincent Hogan is a sports writer with the Irish Independent.
I think it would have been known that there were certainly issues between them. We all had that famous handshake after the Dutch game in Lansdowne Road, where Mick is reaching across to shake his hand after that famous 1-0 win where Jason McAteer gets the goal, and Roy Keane has just given this extraordinary performance. It started with that crushing tackle on Mark Overmars in the first minute, which set the tone for the whole game. And he was such a central point of that whole team, Mick McCarthy's team. But there was an edge between them. And that photograph, it should have told us maybe that there was more going on than we realised.
Long before photographs of awkward handshakes, the relationship between Keane and McCarthy had been uneasy. Keane says he fell out with McCarthy as far back as 1992 when the team was touring the US, as he explained recently to Gary Neville.
So me and Mick, and I had a follow with Mick in America again, and we said a few things to each other. No, not really. Okay, listen, I was out of order, I was drinking, but I was drinking with loads of other lads. Yeah. And what I didn't get,
What happened?
No, we'd been drinking, we were late for the bus.
You were late?
I was late, right? Okay, I was late.
So you are wrong, yeah.
I was late for the beer, and Jack Charlton was having a go. Jack's the manager. But I didn't want a player having a go at me, he's never spoke to me. If Paddy Bonner or Dave O'Leary, who probably helped me, were saying, Roy, you know, and I go, yeah, I take that, but not from somebody who never spoke a word to me and who was shouting at me in front of everybody. So that would have been the start of it.
But in between that summer tour to America and Saipan, there had been plenty of other run-ins. Keane was always pushing for better professional standards in the Irish setup, and some felt that undermined McCarthy.
The last World Cup, nobody was expecting much from the Republic of Ireland. They got to the quarterfinals. So, you know, we're not going out there to make up the numbers. We want to do as well as maybe we did in Italy.
His unavailability for certain international matches had brought him into conflict with his manager on numerous occasions. Keane also missed Niall Quinn's testimonial on the eve of the tournament, generating more negative headlines. As they prepared to jet off from Dublin Airport to start their World Cup adventure, relations within the camp were already strained. Bertie Hearn was Taoiseach in 2002.
I remember the morning, it was election morning, terrible morning, wet morning, ferocious rain, and there'd been a friendly the night before, or two nights before in the Aviva. I was there to greet the teams, and so I was in the airport to see them off, and everyone was in great spirits. I suppose lots of things were written about Roy. I sat with Roy for a good while that morning, because they were out there quite early, and I don't know whether the flight was late or they were there too early, but I was chatting to Roy a few times during the morning. And I suppose the thing that I always remind was he was on his own. He sat on his own. Everyone else was chatting and talking.
As soon as the team landed in their training base in Saipan on Saturday, May 18th, they knew trouble was brewing. John Fallon worked for Umbro and was a kit man for Ireland.
We landed a long haul, first class, very important that we say that, chartered plane, first class then from Japan down to Saipan. We knew it in an hour or two. See, we had people on the ground, I'm not sure, three or four of them, before we got there for a couple of days, and anyway, they called Mick aside, and then the Germans say we're in Scheisen Street, you know.
Back to Kevin Kilbane.
Yeah, I think there was probably a little bit of unhappiness that, first of all, when we got to Saipan, regardless of anything, the kit hadn't arrived, had it? So we were getting ready to go for our first training session, albeit it was a bit of a jog and a run. I don't think there was anything, you know, there was anything too strenuous that was actually planned for us when we'd arrived, but we were having to go with our like leisure kit that we'd been given just to lounge around the hotel in, because the kit hadn't arrived. So there was a feeling of, I don't know, it was just, I felt, and maybe one or two others, that it was just typical of the way that things had gone across the board for us. You know, I mean, I'm talking about in terms of, you know, typical us, I suppose, typical Irish, that, you know, kit's not arrived, we just got to get on with it. That was pretty much it. But then when we arrived at the training ground and we saw the facilities and we saw the pitch, we realised, look, come on, it wasn't great at all. I think everybody knows it was terrible.
David Marr was working in Saipan as a photographer for Sportsfile. On the first day of training, he took a picture that would capture the mood of the Ireland captain.
One of the key pictures I remember from that particular period was, even before this all kind of started, was I remember just randomly taking a picture of Roy walking around the pitch the day before. I think it was the very, very first session, and I'm not sure whether there was any footballs involved, or the balls hadn't arrived, or some of the gear hadn't arrived, or I'm not too sure of the full extent of the permutations, but Roy was walking around on his own and he hadn't got a pair of boots on, he just had trainers on, and he just kept looking at the ground. And I just done this wide angle shot of Roy just walking around, and it, you know, that picture was used a lot.
But you see, the pitch and the skip, and the skips not arriving accentuated that, whatever you thought about, well, why we going to Saipan? To me, it made perfect sense. I mean, the humidity was 80 or 82, so the idea of it, and I'm not talking on mixed behalf, that's the way I read it, was that you'd acclimatise there, it wouldn't be as intense, and then we'd move on. We had our journalist night, if you want to call it that. That was out of the way. I see the logic in that. Other people mightn't.
It was a terrible facility, terrible pitch that we got. It had never been watered, or it wasn't watered probably in weeks prior to us arriving. So it was, I think there was a collective sigh, I suppose you'd say, but I never felt that it was anything that was ever going to break us. There was a real feeling of, you know, mutiny or something like that. It never felt like that to me. And I don't think that was ever the case with the players at the time. It was just always with us. We're together, we're here, we get on with it. And that was kind of our attitude, certainly my attitude, and I'm sure that was the case with everyone. It was always that way with us.
No bibs, no balls, and no team kit. It wasn't the best start to the biggest tournament of their lives. And Keane left McCarthy in no doubt how he felt.
The training pitch wasn't as good as he thought. And as soon as Mick said that, I thought it must be bad. And there was no balls, of course. They should have been there on Thursday or Friday or something. I think this was on the Saturday evening when we got there, or the Sunday evening. I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't. That's not being prima donna. It's not being pig-headed. That's just being honest. And I was disappointed straight away with that. I couldn't understand it. I couldn't. So I went to Mick's room that night, about half an hour later, and I asked him, I said, Mick, what's going on? I can't believe it. He says, well, you know, the skips should have been here towards their Friday. And I said, they should have been here 2 weeks ago.
David Marr would capture another image that summed up the gathering clouds on the Paradise Island. Keane arguing with goalkeeper Alan Kelly and goalkeeping coach Paddy Bonner during a training session.
What we're looking at is a picture of Roy and in confrontation with Paddy. Paddy Bonner, the goalkeeping coach, and obviously we didn't really know what was going on. We couldn't hear because we were shooting on long lenses and stuff like that, but there would have been raised voices and stuff like that, but it clearly shows that I don't think they seem to be looking for each other's Christmas card list, to be honest with you.
Keane was used to having rows with teammates and staff. He believed it helped drive standards. But the dynamic between him and the rest of the squad was more complicated. Back to John Fallon.
It's hard to describe. Roy is Roy, and like when he's in great form, he's in the middle of it all, and he's funny, and his dry wit kind of can take it apart at times. But now I think it's unfair to say he was away from the group. Now, the last I remember is he was sitting down on the beach with everybody, and Roy ends up putting sun cream on his back. And he always had his daily walk with Mick Bourne off somewhere. That was just clear the head time, you know.
Matt Holland is a former Ireland international.
No, I mean, Roy had his moments where he, you know, preferred to be a bit more isolated, I guess. But he was, he could be great company as well. You know, he was someone that could be very engaging, enlightening. I think you see glimpses of it. Well, I see more of it now as a pundit. You know, as in the media career that he's built, you see the sort of humorous side to him, if you like, the cheeky side to him, which we probably didn't see as often as, you know, as that, because it was such a, it's difficult to say at this time, a heat of battle, for want of a better phrase, with what's going on in the world at the moment.
Back to Kevin Kilbane.
I mean, he is. He's great fun to be around. And at other times, he wouldn't engage with anybody. He wouldn't talk, he wouldn't. So, you know, we know full well that squads and different groups of people in any walk of life have different characters. And Roy was obviously a person who at any given moment could go off.
He was always so focused on what was going on at the time, and he's winning games and all that sort of stuff. He was always engrossed in that. But there were moments where he could, you know, be a part of it, be a laugh, be a joke, be funny, be humorous, and so he can be a very engaging person. But at the same time, he's also very professional and wants to win, and he can be pretty tough at times as well.
It was that conviction that also made him a captivating personality to fans of Ireland and Manchester United. Darragh Whelan was a producer for sports radio show Off the Ball.
There was always something, I think, it's uncompromising about him. We always liked those kind of uncompromising kind of figures. And I think especially growing up, you know, you like a kind of a hero like that, that you can kind of look up to, that kind of says, no, this is my way and that's it. It's interesting as well. I don't know. My dad was a Liverpool fan. I became a United fan. My dad thought he was a Cork Gurrier. I thought he was a legend. As a United and an Ireland fan, you know, we had somebody of this stature. He was an Irishman. He was one of our own. And if he was a Dub, it would have been better. But, you know.
And Keane's drive to succeed was infectious.
It wasn't like Italia 90. It wasn't like Euro 88. Like, I remember I was following those as well. And I remember those times as well. That was just there as kind of, oh, sure, we're here for the crack and, you know, let's have a load of pints while we're at it. Like, whereas this was, okay, we weren't going thinking we're going to win the World Cup, but it was certainly a sense of, do you know what? We have a chance.
The night after his row with Alan Kelly and Paddy Bonner, Roy told Mick he wanted to go home. He had had enough before the tournament had even started. But after talking it through with his wife and his club manager, Alex Ferguson, he changed his mind. With 3 minutes to go before the FIFA deadline, Keane opted to keep his name on the squad sheet.
Keane cited undisclosed personal problems and a knee injury as his reasons for wanting to leave. Hours later, he had a change of heart.
He's training this morning, he's fine, he's in with the lads. They're all gathered around him, they're all together. Maybe these things are sent to try us, and what often happens with the Irish team, we strengthen our resolve and we'll be stronger for it.
As word seeped out of the camp, the tension between the captain and the manager was dominating headlines back home. At training sessions, there was only one focus for photographers. And for David Marr, there's one image that sums up that time.
I've never had covered a training session since Saipan where I only concentrated on one player. The one photograph where Roy and Mick, they walk across from each other, you know, there was an element of luck, and people would say, well, you make your own luck. But, you know, I had been watching Roy for pretty much the whole session, as I said, and all of a sudden then he was walking and then Mick just walked into the frame and it was like bang, 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 bang. And, you know, you pick out your best frame afterwards, but like literally your heart is pounding because you feel that you've gotten the photograph. You pretty much know that that's the shot that is going to sum up the relationship between those two individuals at that particular moment. And when they walk like that and their heads are down, it kind of sums up the whole thing.
A week of tension, or some would say a decade, came to a head in the team's dining room at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Roy had given an interview to the Irish Times and later to RTE, where he criticised the team's preparations. He'd also questioned some of his teammates' dedication.
This morning, as he declared his intention to retire from international football at the end of the World Cup, he lashed out at the Republic of Ireland's pre-tournament preparation, describing their training pitch in Saipan as shocking.
It's not a lot of people say, well, it's typical of Roy and Roy should really shut up, but I can't, especially if I'm captain of the team. We come over here, we travel halfway across the world and the training pitch is a disgrace. And somebody's got to hold a hand up and say, it's like training on a car park.
But when we got there, it was so dangerous. I said from the start, I went, there's going to be injuries here. And of course, 3 days later, there was three injuries. It didn't surprise me one bit.
Mick called a meeting of the squad to challenge Roy. Back to Matt Holland.
I think, well, I mean, there's two ways. Look, I think that Roy had lots of valid points. we're a football team and we turned up without any balls. So, and the pitch wasn't particularly good. And so the points that Roy was raising were valid. You know, you couldn't argue with that. I think it's the disappointing side of it from sort of mixed point of view was that he thought he'd dealt with it in a private way. And then it obviously emerged that Roy had done an interview with the paper and obviously that's then escalated into what happened. But you couldn't argue with what Roy was saying. It was perhaps the way he went about it, maybe, that upset people.
The storm clouds were gathering. I just knew it. Nobody spoke to me. and I went for my meal at 6:30 on the Thursday, and I was told there was a meeting at 7:30. And I knew what it was all about. I knew.
But just prior to the meeting, just prior to that meeting, as I said, we were laid down. Roy was sat beside me, and Roy said, "It's going to go off tonight." That's what he said to me. It was kind of a bit of a throwaway line. He said, "It's going to go off tonight." And I can't even remember what I said to him. It was something like, "What do you mean?" He said, "Oh, it's going to go off tonight."
We had the meal, and we'd been waiting around, and then the group came in. The Tijuana Brass Band or whatever they were, very similar lads going one Calamera, but they went from one song to the next song to the next song, and in the middle of it Mick came in because he hadn't been down for the meal with Ian Evans and Packy, as I recall, and it was kind of trying to usher the band out the side entrance. "Johnny, would you tell the lads that were..." And I'm going, "Thanks very much, that's lovely, there's the garden, boy." And he's finishing the song for us. But anyway, pulled the door. So that Mick started with it, and he had a notebook in his hand, from what I could see, a rather large diary, that's the best way to put it, and obviously a copy of the article that had been in the Times. And he just said, "Roy, there's an article," and then the rest is a bit vague what happened next.
That's John Fallon and Kevin Kilbane again.
But I don't think anyone within the squad was aware of, you know, that at that time that Mick and Roy had had these meetings, that, you know, Roy was walking, Roy was back, and all these sort of things. I don't think anyone was really aware of everything fully what had happened around then. And then obviously when the meeting started, Mick brought in this interview that Roy had done with Tom Humphries on a bit of paper and just said, "Look, I want to address this." And Mick didn't really get too much out. Mick didn't really say an awful lot. He just said, "Look, I want to address this. I think you owe the players an apology." And boom, that was it. It just kind of went, and Roy went.
But he didn't get past that sentence. Let's put it that way. And then Roy just said, I don't know how it started, but it wasn't. He was calm, grand, which is probably more frightening.
When the exchange started then, Roy was obviously on my left shoulder. And my thought when it was going off, obviously when it really started to flare up, was, look, they are absolutely going to come to blows here. There's going to be punches thrown, and I am certain to get a dig within this. So I was kind of preparing myself for these two just to come together, and I was going to get a smack.
Yeah, it was rabbits in the head, like, genuinely, honestly. There was, say, 5 tables with 10 people at each table. Mick was at the top end. There was a door behind Mick which was locked. There was glass doors out to the garden, the Gethsemane as we called it, right? So Mick said we'd sit at the door and it's to stop people coming in and coming out in case the band came back and started. And I think Stephen Finnan and someone else were sitting close to Roy, right beside him. My big problem with it looking back was I've seen a lot worse, like physically, not punches, but coming close to it. And I'm looking and saying, someone's going to say something, say, can I say, "Roy, shut the up, Roy," or someone just defuse it or infuse it or whatever it was. But it just went on, and I think everybody just went, whoa. I'd love to have talked, like, I mean, you wouldn't look at your watch and say alarm, but it could have been 5 minutes, could have been 8 minutes, which is a long time when you think, if you look at your watch for 8 minutes. And it was a bit back and forth then. Mick kind of said his piece back and it was lost then.
As per what was actually said, that's been the subject of debate for 20 years. According to Roy's account, the real point of contention was when Mick accused him of feigning injury to avoid the second leg of the World Cup playoff against Iran.
The final straw was when I was accused of being dislodged, faking injury and going against my teammates in front of everybody, and I wouldn't accept it, and I still don't accept that.
But Kevin Kilbane doesn't remember it the same way.
The constant message that I hear that's coming from that Roy saying Roy was accused of feigning injury, that's the thing that keeps on coming back. Well, I was accused of feigning injury, what else would I say? Never once, and I have never once spoken to any other player, any of the other, 22 members of the squad or however it was, and 15 members of staff, have anyone ever mentioned that that was said to Roy? It was never mentioned. I think Roy could have taken the fact is that Mick actually said to him through that meeting, look, I think you owe it to these guys because they went to Iran for that second leg. I think that, and Roy's immediate response to that, I remember through that bit, was, look, you had an agreement with Alex Ferguson, you had an agreement with him that I wasn't going to go. So whether or not that was construed by Roy as saying, I didn't think it was that way. Look, you feigned injury to get out and go into Iran.
I can see where he's coming from with that, but it wasn't black and white. It wasn't even grey. In my book, there may have been the implication, not about the injury, about obviously referring to the second Iran game, right? So when we got up in the morning, we didn't realise that the staff or players, that Roy had gone. And my recollection of it, without trying to involve anyone else, was that Roy had told Mick Bourne that he was heading back because he had a knee injury. And Mick Bourne told Mick McCarthy. And Mick, if you take it to its other side of it, would have felt, well, why didn't you tell me? I assume, and I'm assuming things, which maybe I shouldn't. And Mick was a bit taken aback. So we go to Iran. We did qualify, even though I beat in the last minute. And I think Mick referred to that, but didn't refer to the injury. I think it was more the procedure. It was more the, well, why didn't you tell me personally? And then Mick was kind of not turning that. Then Roy was taking it personal and saying, well, you're implying that I wasn't injured. I didn't see that. I didn't take that. But I see where, if you wanted to see that, you could see it.
I never felt like that was the issue at all. Roy always missed games for Ireland. You know, if we had a game and a friendly, or sometimes if we had double headers and things like this, there was always, I'm sure, a battle with Alex Ferguson and Mick McCarthy that Roy would miss one of the games. You can have him for one game. And that's how it turned out for that Iran game. You can have him for one game, and he had to go back to play for Man United at the weekend. So he missed our second leg. So that's the overriding thing that comes from that. It's always like, well, you know, whether or not you're on Mick's side or Roy's side, it's like, well, Mick said he'd feigned injury to miss the game, and that was never said. I never heard that said once in that meeting. You know, there's also things that said maybe equally on the other side, where Roy accused Mick of being an English cunt, and he never said that. Roy never said that to him at all. He did say you shouldn't be managing my country. Now, whether or not people within that room misunderstood that's what Roy was saying to Mick, that he called him an English whatever, he never said that. Roy never said that to Mick at all. There was obviously a lot said, and, you know, see you next Tuesday, the word was used quite a lot in describing Mick, but he never called him an English whatever. So these are the two things that constantly come out from that, and they both weren't said in my opinion. You know, I think the parting line from Mick was, where do we go from here now, Roy, because it's either you go or I go, and I'm going nowhere. I think that was the last line of it, and Roy just stood up, and that was it. He just walked out.
I think there was stick the World Cup up your arse was the last thing, from what I can remember. Sorry about the French.
At home, the story would dominate the headlines and the news bulletins.
Ireland skipper Roy Keane has been sent home from the World Cup. This has been confirmed by manager Mick McCarthy at a news conference.
They're following a team meeting today in Saipan.
He claimed it was a slang match between himself and Keane. He said he would not tolerate the level of abuse he received, and so the Republic of Ireland captain was sent packing.
As Keane went to pack his bags, McCarthy was left to deliver the news to the Irish media.
I can't, will not tolerate, not being spoken to like that, but the level of abuse that was thrown at me. So I have sent him home.
The quickly arranged press conference to announce his exit would become a major point of contention for Keane.
You laugh a shock sometimes, people react differently. Like, you sat there and said, did that just happen? Like, and then it dawns on you that he's not going to come with us. Like, and they called a press conference quickly, which I do understand. There was a bit of a mixed, but what else could you do? Because the worst thing could have happened was say nothing, go out, get a tip, and Mick Roy's going home, or where it came from. And it's, so they called a press conference quickly, which looked like, to the untrained eye, can I put it that way, that I was too quick to be done and all. But you could see how was it going to be, how was it going to get out, who was going to put it out there. So you had to kind of make clear of what happened and what the consequences of what happened was, and that Roy had decided I was going home either way.
Back to Darragh Whelan.
The country just became engulfed in this kind of, suddenly it was like you were either pro Roy Keane, he had gotten sent home by this stupid manager, or, you know, he had walked out on his country just before the World Cup because of his stubborn, you know, mentality. So it was literally black or white. There was no grey area here. Like,
Roy Keane is a consummate professional, and he wouldn't undermine his manager or cause any disruption unless there was a good reason.
It's a disaster. I mean, you know, it's not only does it totally diminish our chances of getting through the group, we're going over there and you're not going to see our very best player. You're not going to see the team's talisman, the captain.
Mick McCarthy was pushed into a corner where he had to look at the big picture. Would the performance of the team be affected when we went out at Cameroon?
Where is Roy Keane now? Is he still out in Saipan with the squad?
Physically, I don't know where he is, but I presume he's still in Saipan and arrangements will be made to take him home.
The week on the holiday island had been a disaster. While the Ireland squad flew off to Japan, Roy was left behind to make his own way back to Manchester. David Marr stayed behind to capture one of the most iconic images of the whole episode.
Yeah, I would have been planning on moving over to Japan with the team to continue on preparations for the first game against the Cameroons. But so I'm not too sure whether the office made a decision, I made a decision, maybe we all made a decision that, like, there's no way you can leave this story. So there wasn't many of us. I think there was only about three photographers and there was one camera crew. So, you know, the photographs that I captured at the airport were probably as big as any of the pictures that I ever took in my whole career, to be honest with you, particularly the photograph of Roy with the exit sign. You know, if it's a picture that you're going to take that's under control, you'd look for the light and you'd look for the background and stuff like that. But when Roy Keane is about to leave the island, head back to the UK, and there's an exit sign on the wall, you've probably just hit the jackpot, to be honest with you.
As Keane and McCarthy turned their backs on each other, the reaction at home was one of shock and deep division between those who believed in Roy and those who felt the manager was right. Coming up on episode 2, was there any way back for Keane and McCarthy? Could Ireland's World Cup be saved?
Suddenly Niall was pitched centre circle of this row because he shared the same agent as Roy.
You know, people said it was like the Civil War, like in the sense of without the guns, like, you know, families divided.
And I think Saipan was just one big cock-up, and then, oh, sadly.
Shadows of Saipan was produced by myself, Kieran Lennon, Shane Brennan and Mary Carroll. Recorded by John Smith and Gavin Hennessy. Sound design by Graeme Davidson. Additional storyboarding by Darragh Whelan. Archive clips from independent.ie, Associated Press, Virgin Media Sport, RTE Primetime, RTE News, Off the Ball on News Talk. If you like the Indo Daily, you can follow us on Apple, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.